Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate innovative professionals producing better results in less time. Brought to you by the Desai Group, which you can reach at desai.com. That's DESAI.com. Getting the real work of innovation done. I'm your host, Stone Payton, and joining me is my producer and co-host, Lee Cantor. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Stone. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. What's shaking in your world?
I saw the craziest thing, and this is something I had to tell you because you'd appreciate it more than most people. You're a big hunter, fisher, outdoorsman, right?
Gun-toting redneck, yep.
Exactly. I was watching David Letterman, and they had this guy from New Zealand that does extreme fishing. Have you ever heard of this?
No. What's extreme fishing?
I'm watching this. There's a guy in a helicopter, and they're following. They go, oh, look, there's mahi-mahi. And then they're like, oh, there's a marlin. And it's a marlin. You see it in the water. The guy jumps out of the helicopter and tackles the marlin. I swear to you. He's hugging it, and he's grabbing, like, the pointy thing in the front. And then he lets it go and then gives a big thumbs up. And that's how they do it in New Zealand.
Now, that's an innovative fishing show.
You like that?
I do, man. So what'd you do this week other than watch crazy
that's
fishing
it, just that. I just replayed that over and over. It's quality time with the family.
Yeah.
We went to a lot of movies.
Well, my week was pretty uneventful, but I'm excited about the coming week. I'm going to stay here in town through about Wednesday afternoon and do all my fatherly and husband and business duties, but Thursday, I'm headed down to Daytona. I'm going to watch the boys run.
Is that a mancation?
That's a mancation. Me, my brother, my dad, and his buddy. We're going to take the camper down there and hang out, maybe throw back a couple of beers and watch them run.
Wow.
So looking forward
to
it. Is
that an annual event for you guys?
Well, no, but I think it will be. As long as my brother can continue to afford the tickets. You know, that's the key to all of it.
He's the weak link.
Right. Oh, me. But one of the things, the reason that has an impact on our listeners is I obviously won't be here on Monday because I'll be maybe hungover and
recovering.
Recovering and coming back. But we'll be back on the 23rd. We've got a great show lined up on the 23rd. I can't remember the second guest, but I know one of our guests is going to be the director for the Innovation Center at the Kaiser Permanente Innovation Center. So I'm really excited about that interview.
Wow, that's great.
But we got a great show this morning, too. We got two folks on this morning, and the first that we'll have on is a gentleman by the name of Paul Zing, who is CEO of Owllink. We're going to visit with him a little bit about some very exciting and innovative technology that they have brought to market. And then after that, we're going to speak with a local consultant here in Metro Atlanta who serves the business-to-business community, a gentleman by the name of John Holner. So good stuff this morning.
Let's go.
All right. Well, first up is Paul Zing. He's CEO of Owllink. And I'm going to just share this background with you. It's a mouthful, and then we'll get Mr. Zing to clarify it for us. But the advanced press is that Owllink Technology is a leading provider of innovative technology that transmits uncompressed, high-definition digital video, audio, and control signals simultaneously over a single transparent DLI. I have no idea what any of that means.
That's why he's here.
But I bet Mr. Zing does. Welcome to the show, Mr. Zing.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
We're doing great. It's a delight to have you on the show. I tell you what, both for my benefit and for that of the listeners, can you give us a little more detail and background and help us understand what this product of yours does?
I just listening to you guys' conversation that some kind of a crazy guy is actually fishing from the sky.
Yes. You thought you were on the wrong show, right?
So actually, I think he's actually using some kind of a fish line to hook up the mahi-mahi, right?
Right.
And then if you consider the same line in your household, they actually connect your PlayStation 3 to your flat panel TV. Well, of course, I mean, that same transparent line look and feel like that, but it's actually a fiber optic cable.
So it's fiber optic, so it's much less unwieldy and much less intrusive or obtrusive than your standard big RCA cables like we have all over the studio here.
Oh, yeah. Well, you think about it here, right? So if you envision now the same fish line that coming from the sky on your, you know, on your the living room wall, you're probably not going to see that very clearly. However, it can transmit like all the signals you have. Think about it. how many cables you have behind your, you know, home theater systems, or how many cables behind your TV.
Right.
So if you can be, if you can consolidate all these connectors into just one, you know, single fish line.
Well, I know all the wires behind my stereo and TV and all that. It's an absolute mess.
So how does this wire play well with all my technology?
Oh, okay. So basically right now, I mean, all those wires is already there. So not much you can do about it because it's already on the back of the equipment. However, the two equipment doesn't have to be right next to each other. For example, if you bought a nice flat panel TV and hang on the wall, it looks like a picture frame. Do you want all your messy stuff right next to it?
No.
Probably not. Right. So you really want that those things actually far away. However, because you actually just bought a high-definition digital TV, so which means that you have to send a mass amount of data. That's what we call digital. That's what we call HD. It means that the bandwidth requirement is tremendous. So which means what's the best thing to carry those data? Is fiber optic.
Right.
Right? Because you think about it, right? I mean, the oldest nowadays, you want a fiber optic to home, you know. So fiber optic is really the best to transmit mass amount of digital data. But it does it with style.
I like that. Does it with style. So how did you acquire this technology? Did you invent it or did you buy it? How did you get it?
We're actually homegrown in sunny Southern California.
So how does it work? Like where, like I have a satellite dish at my house and that plugs into, you know, a thing in the wall, and that from the wall it goes into my television. Where does your device fit into this?
My device is fitting between your satellite setup box to your TV. So for example, you know, the antenna can only come into your house in certain places for the reception, right? So, and the setup box needs to be somehow in by the current technology, has to be somewhat closer to your TV in order to do the high definition. But from your satellite to your TV, it could be far away. So what it does is they have to either use the commercial cable to extend that distance, which further degrades the signal. So by the time it gets to the setup box, it may degrade. Then you have to, you know, next to your TV, which is not, pleasant, you know, usually, because it has to be right next to your viewing spot. So if you can put your setup box maybe closer to where your dish is, so you can shorten the correctional round, then from our fiber cable, we can go a few hundred meters, so which is thousands of feet. And you can actually, because it's so thin, you can actually, you know, tuck along the wall. You can actually, you know, run along the baseboard. You won't even see it. And you can just go all the way to your TV very, you know, very easily.
So
and you can actually, go ahead.
So do I have to build, like, kind of a little space where all the technology will be, and then your wires will come from that space?
That'll be even better, you know, which means you can actually consolidate all your gears. For example, your PlayStation, you know, your setup box, your even your PC, for example, and you can actually maybe go to some kind of simple switch, which we also provide that too. And then from there, you can actually run just single cable to each TV you have, which could be in different rooms. And then from each room, you can actually control all your gears with what you have currently, which means you can use remote control to control your PlayStation 3, or you can use you know, wireless keyboard mouse to control your PC, just like they are right next to it, except they're being extended far away.
Wow. So now, is this available now to the consumer?
Yes. You can actually purchase that from Amazon.com.
From Amazon.com?
If you type in Owlink, O-W-L-I-N-K, and we actually provide two kind of products. One is actually simple HDMI extension, so you can connect your high definition setup box to your TV directly. We have another product called 2850, which has you know, USB and then actual audio. So, for example, you know, the USB can be used for your wireless keyboard mouse to control your PC. And also because PC, the video and audio operating separate, so we actually have an actual audio interface for you to actually combine your video and audio all the way into the TV side.
Can you share a little bit? We spent a lot of time on the show talking about innovation. Can you talk a little bit about how you kind of figured this all out in terms of you had this idea, you saw what the gap was in how people were using the technology, and how did you figure out how to come up with the solution that makes things seemingly better and more efficient?
Yeah, actually, this company, before, when we first started here, we actually doing this wireless technology. We're actually shooting a laser beam across a couple kilometers, so for between the building and the building. So you can have instant LAN connection from two buildings without any fiber in between. So it's very, very convenient. So, for example, you have a radio show, a studio in one side, and you have another studio you're going to set up on the other side of the town. And between the two, you need to be having a dedicated connection, which is at the time, about 8 years ago, the fiber optic connection is not available or it's very expensive. So if you can have our device and put on the rooftop and they can talk to each other dedicatedly, and the setup is actually very, very quick. Within 1 hour, you can set it up. However, and then when the flat panel TV become more and more popular, and people say, oh, can you use this technology to connect my gears to my TV, because there's so many messy cables. And that's why we're actually converting our technology and to the wireless, and later on we actually go further and go into a fiber optic because of there's multiple rooms in your house and the wireless is not going to cut it. So this reason why we actually developed this single fiber technology, so we can actually connect all your rooms into one central station.
Well, that really is innovative. And here's what I want to get at. Because, as you might imagine, we talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of organizations that have what seem to be just marvelous ideas, truly innovative, with the potential to create new value. And it seems like one of their biggest challenges is getting the idea to market, getting the market to accept it and help them distribute it. Can you share with us how you were able to get the market to embrace this new product and what you did to get the product out to the consumer?
Yeah, I think that's kind of a common problem that all the innovators are sharing, because society is not very nice to new ideas.
You got that right.
Well, that's kind of the TV theme, right? The Ratatouille is what it says. But anyway, what we did is that because we figured that once the flat panel TV is on the wall, this kind of problem becomes more obvious. Not like it used to be. You have a big entertainment center. So everything is kind of tucked behind the wall. Nobody wants to see it. But right now, when you have TV on the wall, everything has been exposed. So we figured that, the consumer really like it. So we actually, first of all, go to the consumer arena. And then on the consumer side, the TV people is the king. So that's why we're starting to work with major TV, companies.
Yeah.
Korean, Japanese companies. Yeah. So you're probably going to see something coming up, because it takes a long time. Those companies are not—they're not just 800-pound gorilla; they are 8,000 pounds. So it takes time, to move things. Number one, and number two is that we actually go to the retail channel. So we actually went to like Amazon.com. We also went to Circuit City, of course. They're not doing too well right now, but it was there, and also we are. Besides that, we are also going to the commercial market, the CDR market, and then now we actually migrate into some other market like the security, the high definition security market, the CCTV market.
So you really did. You thought through what your potential demand chain looked like, and you knew that you had to educate every point along that chain. It's interesting to me. And I think it makes a lot of sense. You really started, though, with creating some awareness around the end user, and then you backed up to other points of the distribution chain to get them educated and equipped to tell your story and make your product available.
Yeah. I mean, basically, consumer awareness is really the number one. I mean, once people see, this cable can actually connect between all my gears to my TV, you know, with this thing, you know, I mean, like a fishing line. People are amazed. You know, they really don't understand. But when you think about it, that's what the fiber optic do, right? Fiber optic is actually, you transmit everything speed of light.
Right.
And it's like digital. Well, you know, because light is actually pure digital. When the light's on, it's one. When the light's off, it's zero. How digital could it be? So which means that this is really the best way to do it.
Now,
the only thing is that it's they never see this before. You know, it's very unthinkable, you know.
Now, when you're trying to get this out there, how many years do you think it's going to be when everybody just embraces this kind of fiber optic technology, and then everything, and that becomes the de facto way of doing things?
Well, you know, it's very difficult to predict the future. You know, I mean, our government can't even predict the financial tsunami. You know, so it's hard to know how the new technology is going to be taken care, and it will be a takeoff. But if you think about it, right, I mean, right now, the flat panel TV is getting more and more popular. And then the digital is coming to, you know, to be realized. I mean, with, you know, the whole system is going to be changed to digital systems. And everything is going to be high definition. So if you combine all this together here, you can say, how am I going to connect everything together? Right? At some point, you know, people are starting to ask that kind of question, especially the wife. I hate it, you know. Hugging cables. So they will say, hey, honey, can you do something better? So I see this moment. The movement is actually getting closer and closer, and the force is getting stronger. We are getting more calls from, you know, major OEMs now that it really either wanted to embrace it or wanted to investigate it.
So now that you have this great technology, you've begun to educate the consumer base and the balance of your demand chain. Is the innovation phase for Owlink really over, or do you need to continue both yourself and to have your people consistently engaged in innovation going forward?
I think innovation just in the beginning. Because once people are aware of this technology here, then we need to permeate into different forms of life. For example, you know, a lot of other markets, like hospital. Hospital has a lot of high definition images, but it's very difficult to move around.
Yeah.
You know, like, and also like factories, you know, they have a lot of machine visions, but everything has to be, you know, kind of clunking in the local space because they cannot be distributed. So the high definition distribution is a big problem today. And if we can actually get into awareness here, then we can actually helping, you know, different industries to embrace this high-definition digital imaging.
So you really are just getting started, and you really do need to continue not only on your own, but you need to be able to get your people and keep them consistently thinking innovatively and trying to figure out what can we do to create new value in new markets.
Oh, yeah. This is really the key because, you know, the people are moving a lot of advancement in the TV side, which you can see on a daily basis. And people also moving, you know, advancement on the you know, the source side, you know, the Blu-ray is moving on a daily basis.
Right.
But nobody think about how to connect these two together with style.
I like that, with style.
Yeah, and also, you know, I mean, we don't talk about the quality right now. With this copper cable, you know, with the high definition digital signals, you degrade. The HDMI only designed for 10 feet. But who can put things within 10 feet anymore? Difficult. So when it extends distance, the quality degrades. Then actually missing the purpose of high HD in the first place.
Well,
so this is kind of like an area that we actually enable a lot of things happen.
Well, Mr. Zing, you've certainly sold me, and I'm sure you probably sold many of our listeners as well. Not only end user consumers, but the listeners who represent organizations as well. What's the best way for people to learn more about Owlink and this fiber optic technology? What's the best way for them to reach you?
Well, I mean, of course, they can go to the Amazon.com. Amazon actually does some kind of a good education, so you can actually go down there. Of course, you can come to our website. One thing I have to admit, that it's a small company. We don't do a very good job on our website, but we try to put in as much information as we could. Of course, we have this, tech support hotline, and then we can support you. You know, a lot of listeners recently they actually bought our equipment from Circuit City because I guess it's a fire sale. So, you know, people bought the things without knowing what that is.
Right.
And then when they actually took our product to some kind of other retail store like a radio shed, they had no idea either, and they give them a run around. So finally, they call us. And once we spend a few minutes talking to them and show them how this can be done, everybody's like, it's like, wow, I don't know. This is awesome. You know, this is kind of a typical, you know, expression that we got.
Well, I bet it is. Well, listen, we're just about out of time, and it has been an absolute delight having you on the show. And I'm very excited about this technology. And like you said, I think my wife would certainly be pleased if we could reorganize the way that we've done all of the equipment in our home. Before we let you go, I wonder if we could get you to do something for us. We have a little tradition here on the High Velocity Radio Show where we ask each guest to share a mistake that they've made somewhere in their career, and really more importantly, what they've learned from it. It sounds to me like you've done an awful lot right, but I wonder, with as much as you have going on, surely you've made a mistake at some point in your career. Would you be willing to share that with us?
Oh, you know, I mean, if you wait a few years, maybe I can share some success story, but now you have to share my pain story.
Right.
Well, I mean, going through the innovation is actually very, very tough process because of not just you have to come up with technology, which is actually difficult to actually put together. You have to convince a lot of people. You have to convince your own people, which is a lot of times they may not see too far from your vision.
Yeah.
And also you have to educate your customers, who will be very tough for your customers because they just don't get it. And also you have to educate your consumers, which is the tough part because it's very difficult to get the consumer easily. So once you go through different channels, that every time, you know, you lost the fidelity, right? If I tell you something today and then when you turn around to tell other people, every time you lose maybe 20%, right? So by the time you get to the real end user, then you probably lose everything. So which means the education, you know, pass your vision is a very difficult part.
Yeah.
You have to act like an evangelist, you know. You have to be able to, you know, get beat up and keep going. So I think that the endurance is, to me, is actually is kind of like the best friend for the innovator.
I would certainly think so. Well, Mr. Zing, thank you so much for being on the show, and maybe we can have you back sometime.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. I really enjoyed the show. And, well, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
This is the beginning of America.
Bye-bye, Mr. Zing. Okay, next up is John Holner, who's the president of Holner Promotions. And John's got a real interesting take on this whole business of innovation that I'm really interested in us taking the opportunity to explore, because he's been working quite a bit in the business-to-business space. And one theme, one pattern that he's coming across is, I guess I'll go ahead and represent it as pervasive. We'll ask him more about it. But it's this fear of innovation. Can you tell us more about that, John?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you, Stone and Lee, for having me on this morning. It's very frustrating for anybody who's in business to business right now when you're talking to clients and the thing they keep hearing is, oh, well, I don't have any money right now, or things are really tight and we're tightening the belt and we're just not moving forward on any new projects right now. And it's, again, I think there's a lot of different types of fear that, you know, when you look at it from a psychological standpoint, but there's probably three big ones that really impact innovation and just really almost stop it dead cold.
So what are they?
I think the first one is really the fear of change. You may remember from management studies where you look at the different personality types, and about half of the population falls into what's referred to as the friend or the supporter role, and those people in general are just not going to want to change the way they've been doing things. So when you've got a tight economy and you're asking people to make some shifts and changes inside the business to improve the way things are being done, a lot of times people don't want to make those changes. And then that can really slow down the process of moving forward, especially if the business is starting to stall out some.
And do you find that some companies or some kinds of industries are a little more reluctant or more fearful than others?
Not. I mean, I'm seeing it across the board. I work with anyone from retail to the business to business sector to professional services, and people are just, I think, scared right now. And because what's happening is when the economy is going really well, it's not too difficult to get clients. A good economy will make a bad person look okay.
Right.
It's when things start getting tight and the competition for those customers becomes that much more fierce that really only the strong survive. So, you know, in addition to the change, I think the other second fear that you really deal with is that fear of failure. Because when you're looking at what you can do, unfortunately, again, when the cash flow starts to slow down, especially from a marketing perspective, a lot of times, you know, marketing and training are two of the first things that normally get cut because they're soft costs versus hard costs like your overhead, your fixed overhead, your lights and your property and your rent and your employees and things like that. So those hard costs have to get taken care of first. But, you know, this idea that I'm going to try something new that is unproven, there's a huge fear of failure because there's just not that much extra money around to try these different things. And unfortunately, you know, there's an old joke in the advertising industry, half of your marketing is working, half of it isn't. The problem is you don't know which is which.
Right.
So, you know, this idea that I'm going to try something new and it's not going to work and then I'm going to be left with nothing, that I think is also kind of slowing people down right now as they're trying to go through this process of evaluating things. And quite frankly, unfortunately, especially for smaller businesses, most small business owners don't have the time to capture the data to make good, educated decisions. They don't have the systems in place, and they don't have the staff to really not only get that data in the first place, but then go and analyze it and put it into reports. And that lack of information, I think, also tends to lead into this potential for wondering about what's going to really happen.
So as a marketing consultant, I mean, this probably doesn't bode real well for you either. Isn't it harder for you to get work if they're scared to do anything new and different? Maybe you ought to just take a sabbatical and come back when Obama gets everything turned around for us?
Well, you know, it would be nice that I could say that I've got myself all set up to where I could do that, because if I had myself set up, I probably would. But obviously, you know, as business climates change, we have to change with them. And if you're not really looking to make sure that you're keeping up with current trends and even with what your customers need, because you know the challenge I think that we run into is are we really in the business that our customers want us to be in?
Now, there's an idea.
What used to work for our clients really today as they need it may or may not meet their needs anymore. So we have a choice to either, you know, let those clients go by the wayside and focus on people who have the budget and the need for our traditional products and services, or we really have to take a step back, review the resources that we have, and then determine by really working with our clients what they need today and how we can deliver that for them. Because really, you know, the only reason a business exists is to solve someone's problems. You're not solving problems, you shouldn't really have a business.
So is that how you're getting your clients past their fear, having them sort of revisit and take a real hard, objective look at what their customers genuinely need and want from them?
Yeah, but most of the times, again, getting back to that fact that most small businesses don't really always have a lot of time to figure out what's going on. You know, a lot of businesses that get to the 4 and 5 and 6 year mark did it by accident.
Right.
And if you ask them, what did you do to get to that point? Sometimes they have some ideas, but a lot of times they're not even 100% sure of themselves. Which is what does make it difficult when the things get tough to really go back and figure out what's working, what's not working, because no one's taken the time to do that all the way along. They're too busy fulfilling the normal day-to-day operations. So what I've been doing is trying to be objective, and it's nice because I'm not so close to any particular industry that I'm going to accept the norms that everyone in that industry operates under. you know, what I see is one of the most innovative things to do is take a business model from one industry that's very, very successful and adopt it into an industry that's never heard of that model. But the parallels between the two can be quite profound, and you can generate a considerable competitive advantage over your other competitors in your space because no one's doing things that way, and you're going to have a lot less competition for the eyeballs that you're getting with your marketing efforts.
Can you share an example of how you've done that?
I think you know, one good arena would be just taking a look at where people are marketing themselves on the internet. A lot of times I'll have customers that say, well, the majority of my business is only from 3 to 5 miles. And I ask them the question, why does it have to be from 3 to 5 miles? I've got a jewelry store that I'm working with right now that's out on the west side of town that's a little bit further out. They've got so much equipment in their store. They're basically a manufacturer. And they've sold wholesale to the jewelry industry for years, and they can basically keep the price considerably down, but they can develop the most beautiful pieces that you've ever seen. And what they mean by custom jewelry is really coming out of the customer's mind, putting it into a CAD-CAM machine where they actually mill it in wax and then and pour the mold, and it's a really amazing process. But we've been able to insert them into downtown where they never would have thought about marketing before, where there's a lot more money and a lot more people who are looking for high-end pieces. We've been able to insert them in using the internet through different various sites and opportunities to get this whole new market that, you know what, on average, you're not going to probably drive more than 5 or 10 miles to go to a certain retail place. But when you're starting to spend a lot of money and you're seeing, you know, hundreds or thousands of dollars come off that price, people get excited. And that's, I think, you know, again, just kind of think where you can go. And the internet gives you a lot of opportunities to do to hit different niche markets that maybe you never considered previously.
And I like I'm kind of enamored with this idea of, you know, if I'm in the radio business, Lee, and so maybe I look at a surfboard company and see what it is that they do and see if there's not something I can borrow from the way the surfboard company goes to market. And I know that your forte apparently is consulting to small and medium-sized businesses.
Correct.
But I got to believe that should work for Procter & Gamble and Merck and Bristol Myers and those guys, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They've got those huge marketing staffs that theoretically should be going out and looking at all these different models, and they're the ones who have their finger on the pulse of social media and really what their channel distribution models are. And, you know, they got all those educated people. The small business owner, medium-sized business owner, chances are they don't necessarily always have the staff or the resources to keep someone full-time in a position like that, and that's usually where I'll step in and really help them see the forest for the trees.
Well, this might be putting you on the spot a little bit, but a hypothetical situation for you. Let's say that on February the 18th, next Wednesday, mm-hmm. you were doing a presentation mm-hmm. in front of 20, 25 people, and many of them were representing small to medium-sized business, maybe a couple of larger businesses represented there. What are some things that you would share with them, some strategies, tactics, or some ideas or principles that you would share with them to help them get past this fear of innovation and really do something that would be meaningful and productive for them? And it's purely a hypothetical situation.
Well, that's a great question, because I think the first thing you need to do is create an environment inside your company that is conducive to innovation. You know, the probably the other fear that we didn't get a chance to touch on is just the whole idea that people are concerned they're going to lose their job. You know, they throw an idea out there and it gets shot down. Nobody likes that rejection. But again, you throw that idea out there and it doesn't work. Why am I going to stick my neck on the line when I just want to keep, you know, what I've got right now? So you've really got to encourage your employees that, you know, this is the time when we have to dig deep. And, you know, I've seen a lot of people who are getting their hours cut. I've heard of companies, you know, going to 4 days a week, or in different people in retail that are going from, you know, 20 hours to 10 hours if they're working part-time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people are really concerned about this, but encourage your employees. Say, look, we're in this together. We're a team, and my goal is to give you the vehicle to earn an income. What I'm requiring from you is maybe a little bit of extra time in the evening. Can you go on to something like Twitter.com and find out some people in other cities that have this same business that we're in and find out what they're doing to grow their business in their arena. A lot of businesses are localized, so you won't have a problem with a 25 or 50 mile radius, you know, if you're dealing with somebody who's outside of that. Using, you know, leveraging social media to get some insights, get some ideas, follow the postings that some of these people have to see what they see are the trends, what they're talking with their customers about, and take this information and bring it in and really encourage people to do a little bit of brainstorming. You know, and if you have an incentive program where, you know, one of the first rules of brainstorming is there are no bad ideas. You just, you know, an idea is. It's not good or bad. It just is. And you have to throw it up on the wall and see how it might play into the overall process. So if you start getting that mentality across that, look, we're a team. I'm here for you. But I need you to step up for the team. And if we can weather out this storm and figure things out, then you're going to have a position long into the future. And maybe even you're going to get a bonus because you're able to bring me something that we didn't have previously.
But it really does, it seems, in listening to you, it seems as though for a leader to effectively build and sustain a truly innovative culture, I mean, they're asking for discretionary effort and personal accountability above and beyond, you know, the old model of come in, put your time in, punch your card, and here's your paycheck. It's a different world, isn't it?
It is a different world. And obviously, we've been in a global economy for easily 10 or 15 years at this point in time. And that whole mentality of, you know, punch a clock and not have any accountability really has got to go. That's one of the biggest challenges I think our country faces. And the other thing that I think I would encourage these people to do is take your non-salespeople and get them some formal sales training and or take your sales process as it is right now and make sure that it's scripted. That's because if you take what your best salesperson is doing and you try and distill out how they do what they do that isn't a personality factor, you're going to have some people that are just naturally better salespeople because they're able to tap into the emotions of the customer more effectively to hit the buttons that they need to hit to get the sale to go. But there are going to be certain things that they're going to say or certain orders that they take people through as far as how they present the information that are going to be more effective than others. And if you're not testing, you know, the way that your sales process goes, you're not really looking at those numbers, that's probably the second thing I would encourage people to do at this point in time. And again, the challenge to that is that if you don't have that training background, sometimes it's hard to pull that information out because even that person doesn't understand why what's working is working.
Yeah, they play by ear, right? Some of the most talented salespeople, they sell by ear. But it brings up another point that I'd be really interested in your perspective on, and it's this idea, this premise that really everybody's a professional salesperson in some way or another or could and should be in the organization. Would you agree with that?
100%. I've long worked on the idea that you work for You Incorporated, and you are the CEO of your own personal services company. If you're not looking at your own personal development, your own career development, what skills you bring to the market, you will not get to the point that you could if you really had that mindset that everybody is a consultant. Essentially, too, you know, you may just have one customer and it may be your employer, but we're all consultants to someone. And as soon as it costs them more to keep us around than we generate for them, then they can't afford to keep us around. And that's when people start losing jobs.
So back to this totally hypothetical presentation that I'm mentioning that's coming up for this guy that I know. So let's say he's presenting to this group. How can he, in the space of, I don't know, 30 or 40 minutes, try to get that particular group right then past some of these fears that you talked about? Is it what can he do to get them to set those fears aside a little bit?
Well, I think, again, knowledge is power. If you really encourage him to go back and take a look at where things are coming from and have some baselines to make some decisions from. If the entrepreneur hasn't had the formal marketing training themselves to ask the right questions, bring somebody in who can help them ask the right questions. But when you have that data, you're no longer making decisions off the hip. You're basing it on sound facts. And also, again, going back to the whole sales concept, encourage them to turn everyone in the organization into a salesperson so yeah. that everyone has an opportunity for business development. And making sure that they're asking those clients the questions, you know, are we in the business that you want us to be in? And if not, what do we need to do to get there so that we're going to be able to continue this relationship that we have? And maybe the last thing I would do is in a business-to-business space, I always encourage people, I say, look, what are you doing to support the business of your customers? If you're not trying to keep them in business, then you're going to have to go out and replace them when they go out of business.
That's a good point.
So, you know, are you trying to help them by giving them referrals? Are you trying to take a look at what they're doing from their own marketing standpoint? And, you know, if they're kind of a retailer for your product line, how much more have you gone to educate them on the latest and greatest on what the trends are in your industry so they're equipped to compete for maybe the smaller client base that's out there because people aren't spending money?
Well, you know, I was listening to another Radio X show, and they had a guest on there, and I don't remember which show it was. Mike Wittenstein was on one of your other shows, Lee, and this guy is a customer experience design guru, and I really enjoyed hearing him talk about crafting the customer experience, you know, all the way from the pre-purchase portion of the cycle all the way through serving. I tell you what, would you do this for us? Would you walk us through the John Holner Promotions customer experience and help us understand what we would experience if we were working with you?
Absolutely. My initial goal is really to first help you to get that base education that maybe you don't have at this point in time. Make sure you understand fundamental marketing and sales psychology. When you understand the psychology behind things, that's going to allow you to really take a close look at what you're doing. So first I want to get you that baseline psychology. Then we're going to take a look at what you currently are doing and maybe where you want to get to. So we'll go through that gap analysis so that we can have a good understanding that, you know, again, I'm on your team. And if you're not successful, I'm not going to be successful because my goal long range is to, as a consultant, most of my business comes by referral.
Right.
So if I don't do a good job.
Not appearing on these high visibility radio shows.
Well, that doesn't hurt either.
Right.
But, you know, I understand that my role in the process is going to be to deliver for you so that you're going to want to speak very positively of me, and I want a long-term relationship. It's not like I'm going to come in and just do a little bit of teaching, and then I'm going to disappear. That doesn't serve either of us, really, because marketing is an ongoing, evolving animal. It's always changing. You never quite know what's working, what's not working, and you have to test things. And again, when the market starts to shift, you have to make sure that you're in the business that your clients want you to be in. But really, it's not a short process. It's a long-range relationship where, essentially, I'm always trying to find strategic partners for my clients. I do a lot of networking here in the Atlanta area as well as nationwide, trying to bring folks together to really, you know, see where their business can go, take it to the next level.
Hey, listen, before we wrap up, say a little bit more about social media. I know you mentioned using Twitter. That's how I even found you is through Twitter. Can you talk a little bit about that and how you can capitalize on that?
Absolutely. One of the reasons I love Twitter is because of all the social media sites, it's fast. I don't always even have a lot of time to update my Facebook page or blog or do some of these other things when I'm doing a lot of that for clients. So for my own personal self, but Twitter, it's the type of thing that you can sneak in. It's only 140 characters, so it has to be fast.
Right.
And you can get sucked into it. You have to be a little bit careful. But quite honestly, Twitter, I think, allows you to share a little bit of personal and personality where, again, you're building some of your personal brand along with what's going on in your day-to-day operations. But by using, especially if you're in a localized business, using geographic keywords in your post will help other people find you. I think that's probably how I found you in the first place. Stone was because I saw Atlanta somewhere in your profile or in your postings. So it made it really easy for me to connect with you and just go out and basically when you follow someone on Twitter, it's the equivalent of sticking your hand out for a handshake, except you're just doing it through the internet. And, you know, I had mentioned previous to the show that I had have a training that I've done. It's whatsintwitter.com for you, the business owner. And if any of the listeners want to get a free copy of that, it's about 40 minutes of audio. I'd be happy to email you a link that you can download that. My email address is my name, John, J-O-H-N, at Holner, H-O-L-L-N as in November, E-R, and then promos, P-R-O-M as in Mike, O-S.com. Just shoot me that email, reference Radio X, and I'll go ahead and send that Twitter training out for you, because we could probably talk about Twitter for a lot longer than we have time for this morning.
I'll bet we could. Well, thanks so much for being on the show, John. Listen, before we let you go, we're going to ask the same thing of you that we did our first guest this morning. Would you share a mistake that you've made somewhere in your career and what you've learned from it for the benefit of our listeners?
Absolutely. I used to be an instructor for Princeton Review when I was in college, and I used to be a tutor. I actually have an engineering degree, which is I took from that the systems and processes aspect of engineering and applied it to business. But my true passion is teaching and training. I love getting in there and helping people to, you know, turn those lights on and see that expression in their face when all of a sudden they have that aha moment. If I could do that just solely and had all the clients lined up out the door, I'd probably be a really happy guy. the problem, though, when you're working with a lot of small businesses is they just don't have time to do the stuff that you're teaching them. They want to learn the education, but more importantly, they need somebody who can implement it. So when I took a look at my business and realized that, you know, I was just offering training, the feedback I was getting was, the training is all well and good, but I can't do anything with it because I don't have any time to do it. Who's going to do this for me? So literally, I had to ask myself, am I in the business that my customers want me to be in? And the business my customers wanted me to be in was implementation. So I've really had to modify what I'm doing to allow for implementation and to build up a team that can help me to support my clients and implement the strategies that we bring to the table as best as possible in the fastest time frame and with the lowest budget possible. So I had to, again, ask myself that question. Am I in the business that my own clients want me to be in?
But the key to that is you were willing to do it. You opened yourself up to what is the challenge, what is the new need, and then you stepped up to fill that need.
Absolutely, and that's a choice that every business owner has to make. They can, stick to their guns and they say, this is really what I want to do, or they can remember that they're in business for the customer and not necessarily as much for themselves, and then they can meet the needs of the customer, or they, again, you have the choice. You can go after the people you want, and there's almost always a market for just about everything, but that market gets smaller and a lot harder to find the more stuck in stone you are to your own own ideals versus trying to pay attention and really serve your client.
Did you write down that, Lee?
I got it all down.
Don't get stuck in stone.
I thought we wanted people to get stuck in
stone. Oh, well, that's true. And did you jot down any of those ideas he had for the hypothetical talk we were mentioning?
Yeah, yes, exactly.
Hey, thanks so much for joining us, John. It's been terrific having you on.
Absolutely. Pleasure to be here in the studio with you guys this morning.
Until next week, this is Stone Payton, John Holner, Paul Zing, Radio X, and my buddy Lee Cantor saying we'll see you in the fast lane.